Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power and more. Today we're going to be talking about power on, well, in a different expression. It's the aspect of energy, which we need every single day. And we are fortunate, when we think of early pioneers, how little they had of it. We have electricity. We're able to, through the use of gasoline, go to just about anywhere we want. We've got all kinds of things that we utilize on a daily basis, and we just take it for granted. But it hasn't always been there for us to utilize because we didn't know how to utilize it. So through the years, because of people being willing to explore different modalities, we developed various aspects of technological understanding that allowed us to evolve to the point where we are. However, in the United States, we have detached from a great deal that we ourselves can take care of. And finally, we're coming back full circle to an attitude of how can we be self-sufficient? What can we do to put ourselves in that positioning of strength that we have had in the past that we've sort of ignored, gotten sloppy about, let things slide away, thinking it's better to go someplace else than to take care of what we have right here. Well, my guest today, Mark Stansberry, has a book that is very impressive. It's titled America Needs America's Energy, Creating Together the People's Energy Plan. I'd like to welcome Mark Stansberry to the show. Hi, Mark.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Donna.
Now, you're an international businessman.
Right.
You've been involved in various modalities of energy development.
Right.
You are really concerned about the well-being of people, and you're the founder and chairman of the GTD Group. You've written other books. You've also been associated with the People to People program, International, People to People International, and I'm familiar with them. And there's so much more that your life has encompassed in the way of experience. What pushed your buttons, made you say, I have got to be vocal about options that we have right here in the U.S.? Why is that so important to you? Why is it this has become the mission of your company to be able to develop energy resources?
Well, Donna, the future generations, which would include my children and grandchildren and beyond, are dependent on us to keep the American dream alive. I wrote my second book that I wrote in 2008, was published. It's called The Breaking Point, B-R-A-K-I-N-G, Stopping Point, America's Energy Dreams and Global Economic Realities. And I expressed my view that America and the world were facing an energy crisis, and the good news was that America's energy problems could be solved, and the bad news was that our country's energy crisis did not exist in a vacuum but and was not temporary and would not fix itself. And at that time, I stressed that failure, Donna, to effectively deal with this problem would threaten our nation's economic prosperity, compromise our national security, and could radically alter our way of life. You talked about that we have access to energy and how important that was. So for too long, we in America have been, you know, wasting time blaming the energy industry or the government or, you know, presidents for failure to adopt a national energy strategy. We've not had an energy plan from Nixon all the way through Obama, when really we should be responsible for creating the plan. And so as consumers of energy, I believe that we must drive that process, evaluating how we can best leverage our natural resources here at home and to ensure this long-term energy independence that you're talking about, and security, and that American citizens must take an individual responsibility for the state of this great nation, striving to protect the land that we all call home. So our national security has long been one of the assets we cherish, and we can't afford to continue relying on foreign nations to fulfill our energy needs or miss this opportunity to create a forward-thinking infrastructure that will support the American way of life. So the book, America Needs America's Energy, I think the sub-theme, creating together the people's energy plans, is the important part. Because though America needs America's energy, we've got to create the plan. And so it's dedicated to the proposition that we need an energy revolution in this country right now. We must be the leaders, and by turning to new technologies, innovation, and the enduring American spirit that has enabled us to, you know, of course, overcome challenges this nation has faced since our founding, the goal of total energy independence can be achieved before it's too late. And we're moving in that direction, but we need to move even more so. We're the ones who will have to do it, and because our institutions haven't proven they are up to the task, Donna. And so it's time to take a stand, evaluate our own impact on our nation, and play our part in preserving our country. So I put together this book, which gives pros and cons of all forms of energy. I mean, you're talking about, though I've been active in the oil and gas sector for 36-plus years, I realize there's pros and cons of coal and oil and natural gas, but also all forms of energy. We look at it, and I try to look at it from the standpoint of striving for energy efficiency and environmental preservation, and how do we get to that point where we have enough energy but still preserve our environment. And so I go through the pros and cons as well.
Mark, one of the things that I think is an extremely huge challenge, and that is communication.
Right.
We are at a crossroads of history where we are dealing with a lot of fear.
I agree.
Education is something that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
We have been indoctrinated through societal trainings, through our homes, through churches, through all kinds of different modalities, that there's always the government's supposed to take care of us. I can't tell you how many people I talk to. When they hear the word government, they seem to think it's an ethereal something out here that's got this magic wand.
Mm-hmm.
And all government is people.
Right.
And that is what we have to understand. And
right.
I think that there is a part of a dumbing down process of underestimating the intelligence of people. I really mean this sincerely.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that we're going to be able to get past a lot of the fear and suspicion of many, many companies is having, I'll use the magic word that has been misused many times, transparency.
Right.
And collaboration. There needs to be an understanding, because there is so much fear right now. And being in media, I can testify to how many people in the media process feed fear. They want fear. That's what's going to give them ratings. We want the bad, the ugly, and the worst possible. This is what's going to go on.
Right.
It's very difficult, I think, for people, if they haven't had an understanding of what really is going on, how we're able to have not just electricity, but a wireless technology that enables us to communicate right now. You're in Oklahoma. I'm in the Pacific Northwest. The studio is in California.
Right.
People are listening from who knows where in the world because of the technology that has evolved. Now, people know that it's working, but they just take it for granted. Well, if that energy grid goes down, excuse me, you have nothing. It happened in New Jersey when the hurricane hit. It's happened in New Orleans. It happened in Japan. It has happened around the world. Yet, because of our sophistication, people say, oh, it'll be up in just a minute. I know. I've been guilty of that. We just assume things are going to be taken care of.
Right.
But it's not just an energy. It's an infrastructure of people, education, service orientation, an ongoing understanding of being attentive and alert. And it's not just one modality. It's more than one. Wind turbines, can't use them all the time. Sometimes the wind doesn't blow.
Right.
So let's go into this, because I have such a belief in America, I really do. And I'm not being Pollyannish about this, because I think the spirit of America is so strong, And it is so strong because it is a daring spirit. It believes it has the right to be free. And it really concerns me when people have this, oh, well, attitude. No, 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 no. There's a lot of pioneers that have gone before us that have fought things just as bad as what we're going through right now. But you have to stand up. You have to become understanding. You have to be open. You have to be willing to learn. But fear, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, fear of loss, fear of so many things, often is underneath and corrodes communication. Mm-hmm. How can we get past this?
Well, there is the urgency, and I emphasize urgency for energy education and environmental education, and finding that balance and coming to the table and unlike Washington's doing, communicate like you're talking about, using the word transparent, is really communication, being able to talk about the issues. For 30 years of my career, of the 36-plus years I've been in the business, in the energy industry, very little serious attention was paid by the media or government to energy policy and issues. In the last 6 years, because even when I wrote it in 2008, the breaking point, even at that point there was complacency. That complacency finally began to change about the same time I wrote the book. As politicians sensed that energy security had emerged as a critical issue, especially because of the shale play, S-H-A-L-E play, throughout the United States, which has been very instrumental in bringing in production in a big way. But it goes back to the fact, again, that unfortunately there's misinformation. And really, instead of looking into education, it's just taking the word of the media or taking the word of someone in their particular interest. Unfortunately, there are those that think that, you know, shooting for some food and up comes from the ground some bubbling crude, or that JR is a standard example in Dallas show of the character of an oil man, or that, you know, electricity is found within the walls of a room, always ready for usage. It's time to tell our story. And that was my challenge last week. I went to San Antonio to present. It was to the South Texas Wildcatters in the oil and gas business. I said, it's time you tell your story. It's to the point where don't be ashamed of your industry. Be supportive of your industry. Tell what you do. Tell what the service you provide. It's so diversified when we talk about energy. Mm-hmm. And that energy education needs to be taught, you know, from the drilling site, the pipeline, to the refinery, production site, oil truck, tanker. I can go on. And all that given, there's the safety issues, the environmental issues that have to be addressed. We need development of new technology. We need all this to happen. And that's just the oil and gas sector. I'm not talking about, I do in my book. I say the pros and cons of nuclear and wind and solar and the pros and cons of natural gas and oil and coal and so forth. We've got to take this on as individuals, as companies, as schools, as hospitals. And the challenge is there. Major technologies, the number of years it took for major technology to reach 50% of American homes. It took 71 years for the telephone, 52 mm-hmm. years for electricity. I can go on. And there's several, like 14 years of cell phone, 12 years for VCR, 11 years for CD. And I guess what I want to say is, what is the future of energy over the next 5, 10 years, 20 years, and what are we doing about it? We don't want to be back to the point where we're at the mercy of foreign countries or so forth. We need an energy mix, yes. And I would say we need to look at all forms and create the plan, which in the book there is an evaluation and charts and asking questions on energy and environment, and really set in our goals. How are we going to use our goals for the future of our country?
Mm-hmm. One of the many points, and I'm going to mention a couple of them that are in the first part of your book, actually, the average gasoline pump price in 2011, we're stepping back there, included a 45-cent per gallon tax.
Right.
And here in the state of Washington, we have taxes upon taxes upon taxes that are put in on us, and people really get disgusted in the state because of it. But you bring out a point that the energy industry pays severance taxes, gross mm-hmm. production taxes, ad valorem taxes, corporate taxes. See, I think there is so much misunderstanding.
There really is.
About corporations and businesses. Now, I concur. There are always those greedy people that are out there. And yes, media really focuses on them.
Right.
But the average individual, honestly, in their average job that they might be working for, whether it's a garbage disposal company or software, a hospital, you have no idea what the costs are. People, normally, the employees are kept ignorant of this. I know a few businesses that don't do this. And boy, their employees have a much different attitude about it.
Right.
They really go, oh my goodness, I didn't know you spent so much money on paper or soap or having to pay taxes. Why is it this is the case? People often are blind to the cost. They'll hear a sum of billions of dollars, and that is awesome. I mean, that really is something. But they don't realize what else is going on. You talk about the gross production tax levied on industry accounts for 10% or more of the total state tax collections each year. And in your state alone, nearly $1 billion is paid out just for that one tax.
Right.
And state revenue funds, they're supported by the corporations, by the energy industry. And you specifically addressed in this one segment about Oklahoma that there are 71,224 Oklahomans directly employed by the drilling and production sectors, another 228,115 jobs supported indirectly by the oil and gas industry, and there's 300,000 jobs generating more than $14 billion of labor income in your state alone. And the energy industry, your annual operations generate $51.7 billion just in the state of Oklahoma. We're not talking about any other state right now. Just in Oklahoma, goods and services, it's almost one-third of Oklahoma's gross state product.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is significant, and every state in this country can have a phenomenal amount of productivity if they look at their individual environment and say, how can we make our resources work for us so that we don't, number one, destroy the environment,
exactly.
Number two, see this as something that's long-term, and number three, how do we contribute to education that's going to make the youth excited about being a part of something that is always needed and that there is a future in it. This isn't something that, gee whiz, 100 years from now, it's going to be gone. That's not the case. That's not how we have to look at it. We have to change our perspectives of thinking.
I agree, and that's why I think it's so important. This book, America Needs America's Energy, Creating the People's Energy Plan, really addresses what you're talking about through a personal energy journal, through study, and not just taking the book alone. Do your homework. People need to do their own homework. The energy industry is moving forward in innovation and technological advancement. So, you know, it's saying please stay current with the latest information available. This is a tool. This book is a tool for the individual and, again, hopefully families and companies and organizations to move forward. And America's energy future is in our hands. We don't have to wait any longer for the government to rally us. We can take hold of this. History has, you know, shown this will not happen. The time has come for all of us, Donna, the people, to take control of our energy future here in America. And that's the way we start with keeping a personal energy journal, which will assist us in planning and executing our energy plans. And that's why I go through the pros and cons of forms of energy. That's why I also, though, go and talk about our global situation, our transportation needs, our power generation needs, and then the global geopolitical economic realities and the demand for on the international front as well. Those are all factors, very important factors. And then look at our options. And, you know, we want energy security. You just talked about jobs in Oklahoma, but throughout the nation, really, and that is there are hundreds and thousands of companies and individuals that play an important role in energy. and their lifeblood to providing consumers and energy availability for transportation and for power generation. So we're talking about economics that you just talked about. We're talking about jobs, and it's time that we step forward in an urgent way and get this done. And we individually can do this. And the challenge that I present in the book is that. Let's create the plan, and we can do this together. In certain parts of the country, and I mentioned this in the book too, that in Austin they're working on a grid program that it's a private-public partnership to study how they can research and have a sustainable energy grid better than anywhere in the United States is what they're hoping. So it'll be a you know, something that can go throughout the United States as a pattern. There's wind energy in West Texas. The Plains are there, and so they're taking advantage of the Plains of providing wind energy to communities. So we see things happening in not just the oil and gas sector, but in wind and solar and other areas. And so it's becoming becoming more educated, the urgency of education. And this is just one tool that I hope that those will go, the listeners will go to. And the book has been endorsed by both Democrat and Republicans. I'll give an example. Republican Oklahoma Governor Frank Keating, who's conservative, and then Democrat former Congressman Jim Jones, who was also a chief of staff to LBJ. So we've got a good cross-section of folks that say, hey, Mark, I agree. We need to do our homework. We need to create a plan. This is a good tool to use. Whichever side of the aisle you're on, you know, politically, it's not, you know, put that aside. Let's become educated. Let's make decisions.
Well, I think it's time to step away from what I call old-fashioned isolationist thinking.
Right.
The word social entrepreneur now is becoming two words that are becoming very popular. Well, reality is that you have to be mindful in today's world. Our populations are expanding. We have to provide food. There are so many different things going on. There are old modalities of governments, et cetera, that are literally dying. Their processes are dying because they're not working.
Right.
We have such a need for energy. We have a need for innovation, for understanding safety protocols, for understanding applications. Not everything can be painted with the same brush. Mm. We have to look at what is going to be most useful in XYZ environment. And how do you contribute to the shifting in thinking to people where they can see a benefit of if they planted more trees, for example.
Right.
She lives. Yes, it's going to take water, but my goodness, it's going to change our environment. This is why. This is how.
Yeah.
Or if you're going to transport water, how are you going to be able to transport that water? How do you keep the water tables healthy? How do you keep so many things in proper balance? And this takes education. This takes an openness. This takes a willingness to say we've got to do some things differently. And I agree. It involves community. It involves people understanding that what they do does have an effect on what's going on. There is a significant statement that actually one of many, but one I'm going to refer to is China. Now, people in general often have a very strong attitude about this tremendous country. And they'll get very angry. Yet, I know a long time ago, I said, you don't need to be concerned about that. Yes, there's that's occurring. But what you're not aware of is that the Chinese, as they come out of the imprisonment of thinking that they were in for so long, dictated by Mao, as they wake up and develop their own entrepreneurial resources, and yes, financially, they have got, supposedly, a lot of good things going on. And people may say, we should have it instead of them. I'm going to say, don't worry about it. We can have it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you point out. China was and is very much involved in the automotive industry. But they have a tremendous need for oil right now. They are finding that the demands of the population, they're saying, we want to have a better life. And we're not talking about just a few thousand people. We're talking about millions of people that are now demanding, where they couldn't even have a hope or a prayer 25 years ago of having it. Now they're saying, we can, we want it. And they're wanting changes. That opens up doors of opportunity for us.
No question.
What can
about
we bring to them? How can they utilize the skills that we have of inventiveness, efficiency, et cetera, that we develop here and our supplies, they're going to need it. The same thing with India.
You're exactly right. And, you know, what you mentioned earlier that I was involved with People to People as chairman for 4 years and up through August 30th of this year, in fact. But the People to People organization definitely believes in peace through understanding, and that's through humanitarian culture education. How can we as an energy industry, and I think the challenge that I give to our own energy industry is that we do need to become, you know, have our own sustainability and become energy independent. With that said, though, tonight there's going to be a child in different parts of the world, possibly in our country, that don't really have the proper lighting or refrigeration or whatever. And so our challenge is we can use our expertise throughout the world and show the world they can also become self-sufficient and sustainable. Sustainability can be a factor. So I think that's our challenge as well. And so I bring that out in my talks, is that it's not just a matter of we become independent and then we're going to isolate ourselves from the world. We can't isolate ourselves from the world. But at the same time, we do need not become dependent on foreign oil. And that's one thing, Donna, that I'm, you know, very supportive of is natural gas. It's a U.S. energy answer that's available today. We should definitely be putting it to use now. For years, I've voiced my belief that natural gas reserves are critical to a strong U.S. economy and extremely important for America's energy security. So natural gas is an abundant. It's a clean fuel. It's been used for many domestic uses, from heating our homes to serving as an alternative to gasoline. It's a bridge fuel to our country's energy sustainability. And so I believe one area that should definitely be looked at, or form of energy, is definitely natural gas. Of fossil fuels, it definitely stands out, above coal and oil from the standpoint of not necessarily abundance, because both oil now and coal are in abundance, and both have a future here by all means, but natural gas could be a big factor as well. When I say oil will be a factor for many years ahead, and that's because, if nothing else, the petroleum-based consumer products that I put in my book, there's an unbelievable amount of daily usage we use in our daily lives. Petroleum-based products, you think, well, what are those? Well, everything from antifreeze to antiseptics to asphalt to aspirin, balloon, you name it. I have a list, I believe it's
Mark, I'm going to stop you right there. We're going to take a break here. I apologize for interrupting you. Thank you for staying with me. We're going to come back to Mark Stansberry, his book, America Needs America's Energy, Creating Together the People's Energy Plan. This is so significant because you don't want to be without electricity. You don't want to be without mobility. We are going to come back and talk more, not just about how important this is, but also how you can take a stand and how you can become educated yourself and say, let me learn more so I can be a part of this collaborative effort where we move forward, not backwards. Thank you, folks. I'm not interested in going back to the Renaissance days. Forget it. No way. I like all of the blessings that I have, and I want to keep them, but I do know we can improve upon it. We'll find out more. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break for just a moment. When we come back, we'll be finding out more information that we'll be able to share with you. America Needs America's Energy. That's the title of the book. We're going to be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. We are coming back to talk with Mark Stansberry. America needs America's energy. This is vitally important to all of us. The conveniences we enjoy, the medicines we take, so much is affected by energy. We've seen that demonstration when storms have hit, areas have been wiped out, the grids are down, banks can't operate, you're not going to get money, everything is electronic, what do you do? Well, Texas and Oklahoma have been actively pursuing certain areas, and so have areas of North Dakota, but in general, we don't pay too much attention. We take things for granted. But that's what this book is bringing out in the way of information. And Mark Stansberry, again, is with me. Mark, UPS, you were talking about natural gas before we went on break. UPS has started to initiate this change. They're using natural gas for their vehicles, aren't they?
Definitely. In fact, CNG, compressed natural gas, they were actually, UPS started using natural gas, compressed natural gas, many years ago. I started a conference, Donna, in 1992 called the International Energy Policy Conference. And the theme was striving for energy efficiency and environmental preservation. And a few years later, UPS, at one of our conferences, received an award from the, at that point, the Secretary of Energy for Oklahoma, because of their converting fleets, over to compressed natural gas. And that was in 1994. They were operating at that time 142 vehicles in Oklahoma City and Tulsa. And there are other other companies as well as schools that have seen this happen. And I do credit them for looking forward. And we need more companies and more individuals to do that, yes.
Now, the difficulty is you can travel across country and you've got gasoline stations.
Right.
But natural gas, you don't have, here in the state of Washington, I honestly don't know of any place where you can go up and fill up with natural gas. I mean, I know there have to be some spots, but that isn't going to happen. I mean, it's a real infrastructure, and that's what people don't realize. There is, with any energy restructuring, you have to develop the plan, the infrastructure, so that it is conveniently available. And this is not going to be done with a snap of a finger. It is not add water, milk, mix, and you got it. You have to think this through so that it has a long-term picture and visibility. And I think many times it's hard for people in today's instant access world that it's very hard for them to get past that. It's very difficult, I think, when you talk to people, they'll say, well, how come this isn't in place now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a process. There's an infrastructure that has to be in place so that it can operate efficiently, effectively, and well. And the greatest demonstration I can think of is the highway system
mm-hmm.
that was built under Eisenhower. People had a heck of a time going from point A to point B for I don't know how long,
mm-hmm.
until Ford developed the Model T, and then the roads were built.
That's
and
right.
After that, it just was boom, it seemed like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was because of a well-thought-out, efficient process that enabled a speed of development. How can this evolve
mm-hmm.
with natural gas when you have so many people warring over this?
No, and it's a very good and valid question. And that's, you know, I give the pros in the book of natural gas. And the con is what you're talking, the cons are what you're talking to, referring to, that is. America currently lacks a national infrastructure for CNG use. And so I believe that what we're seeing is our challenge is really to go to fleets and for trucks to go on a national infrastructure. Once we have a national infrastructure similar to the highway system, then it'll be used. And so converting vehicles to CNG right now is costly. Though cleaner than oil or coal, natural gas still contributes some carbon dioxide. But there was a documentary, Donna, that I put together with an Academy Award winner. His name's Gray Fredrickson, back in 2012. And the documentary is called The Grand Energy Transition. It's based on a book by the same name by Robert Hefner III, who was a founder of a company that pioneered deep and ultra-deep natural gas. And of all partners we had in that, one was, you would expect Boone Pickens. One of our partners on the film was Ted Turner.
Interesting.
And Ted believed, and he, in fact, bought a book, the books for all members of Congress and Fortune CEOs, because he felt that natural gas, that it's going to be age of energy gases for the future, and it would create us looking towards a hydrogen-based economy. So it's going back again. Education, the urgency, the infrastructure, it does take time. But when we do move forward, for example, with natural gas, it'll provide America with jobs, with prosperity, and it's our fuel. We don't have to import it. It's here. It's national security. And so that's just another option that we go through in the book. We do talk about, of course, oil and coal and hydroelectric efforts and going to hydrogen and geothermal and nuclear fission and biomass, nuclear fusion, solar, wind, pros and cons of each, and even talking about nanotechnology, which I think mm-hmm. is something that may be in the future as well, or will be, if not maybe, it will be.
Well,
it is right now. So,
yeah.
As far as the application for energy, though, and it's there and it's being used,
mm-hmm.
and so it's a bright future, which exists for nanotechnology and the energy industry.
I get very concerned when I hear a lot of ranting and raving about certain industries that are so vital to so many aspects of everyday life, and one of them is coal.
Right.
And I know here in the state of Washington, they're trying to shut down the coal mm-hmm. industry. And it is of a great deal of concern to me because the people that are making the greatest amount of noise really don't seem to have the most amount of information.
Right.
Now, can an industry be improved? Absolutely.
Right.
I'm not going to put any industry up on a or in a demagogical type of situation. That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
We do have to pay attention. But there is so much that goes on that we need to look at differently. It's how do we resolve this instead of let's trying to destroy something. Let's understand the benefits. Be really educated about mm-hmm. why this is important. And let's look at what we can do. And I have found many times people within the industry itself are just as locked in to false ideas as
right.
to people outside of the industry, and then they go and they butt heads.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, wait a minute, let's work together for heaven's sake. Let's be innovative with it. If a particular challenge is happening here, what do we do with this? How do we resolve it? What is it that can be done? Let's look at how to solve the problem. Let's get to the root of the problem. And let's stop all of this bantering, because we need resolution. We need to step up and realize that as Americans, innovation has always been a saving grace.
Mm-hmm.
Have there been mistakes made? Of course. The mistakes were made because of ignorance. It's always easy to look back and say, well, that was stupid for so-and-so to do. But if you don't know what the time frame was, and if you don't understand what was going on in the time, how are you going to recognize why they did what they did? You can't. So if you can't do it regarding the past, how in the world are you even going to be doing it regarding the present?
No question. And again, the emphasis that I have of the sub-theme, and that is creating together, emphasizing together, people's energy plan, that's the challenge. And you said, you know, resolution, I say revolution as well. And that coal, there's a project called FutureGen, Don, and that coal is the least costly, most abundant energy resource available in the U.S. In fact, give you a comparison to use or to think about. In Oklahoma, we have about 50% of our power generation that comes from coal.
Mm-hmm.
We're an oil and gas state from what most people would think in the United States, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because a lot of that has to do with a factor of cost, as well as a FutureGen project that's coming on potentially, and it's a billion-plus government industry project, but it's a private-public, actually. It was proposed under George W. Bush, and then also under Obama. And really the purpose of the FutureGen project was to find ways to have more clean coal technology, and especially because it's the most plentiful fossil fuel we have in the United States. The goal was to provide a first-of-its-kind clean power plant with a target completion at that time to 2012. We still don't have that. But ways that we can look at research and technology and use coal, we should definitely look at it. And that's with every form of energy. And I think in the book, it's not just emphasizing natural gas, which I'm a strong believer of, and don't shy away from that. I do believe we need to look at all forms, all American, America needs America's energy, all forms, all American. And I think we need to look at coal as a way to our future as well.
I concur. And I know we're almost out of time here. One of the fascinating segments that you have in your book is you have charts that you tell people these are some things that you can evaluate your own environment, what you're doing in your own environment,
mm-hmm.
and how you can improve energy usage.
Right.
And I think this is very, very good in the way that it allows an average individual to say, okay, let's see what choices we have. Let's look at what we are going to be able to do. And I think there are a lot more people that as they are becoming educated, not fearfully so. That really bothers me when people use fear. I don't like that. Let's become educated with an understanding that even though as individuals we wrap our pipes or a water heater so that we
exactly.
don't lose a lot of heat. Little things like this that are cost-effective,
mm-hmm.
efficient. Maybe you make an investment in solar, although it's extremely expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you going to do it? What is the purpose of it? What's the infrastructure you can utilize within your own home
mm-hmm.
that's going to be more efficient and effective? All of this is invaluable, and you cover this in the book, America Needs America's Energy. I've been talking with Mark Stansberry, and you can go to peoplesenergyplan.com. Why not get involved? You may not own a corporation or a huge business, but even if you do, it doesn't make any difference. Do or don't. We can all take little steps. We can be open to educating ourselves. And instead of getting been out of shape because we don't understand certain things or we allow other people to do our thinking for us, take time to read. Take time to listen. Take time to observe. It will make a difference. We're all a part of the team. Collaborative effort is what is needed now so that we can stand tall, stand true, and stand firm, knowing that as a nation, we can be self-sufficient in the right way and can actually help other people around the world be the same way too. This is Donna Sebo. Mark Stansberry, thank you so much for giving me the extra time today, and I'm delighted to have had you as a guest.
Thank you, Donna.
It's been a pleasure. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
If you are an author and would like to be a guest on the Donna Sebo Show, please send a review copy of your publication along with a press release to the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Allow 6 to 8 weeks for your material to be reviewed. Again, the address to send your material to is The Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. Tomorrow we're going to be talking fashion history. Yes. Boy, we gals certainly have had weird things in clothes that go back for generations. And I had someone tell me once, many years ago, when I went into a store and I was going to have an outfit altered because it just didn't fit me right. And the lady who was doing the altering for me was a professional tailor. She had been trained by the best. And she said, well, Donna, we can let it out a little bit here and we can do this, that, or so. But she said, we don't have very much material to work with. And I said, why is it, Mabel, that when it comes to altering women's clothes, it's very difficult to do? And she said, Donna, they do it on purpose because they want women to constantly buy clothes. And not only did I hear that from Mabel, but I also heard that from a very fine man who had been in the clothing industry for years. Men have their suits, they have good amounts of margin and material, so it needs to be taken in, let out with their suits. Hey, it's a piece of cake. Not for us gals. They don't want that. They don't want you to have all of your clothes forever. They want you to change every year. So we're going to be finding out about how some of those changes came about. My guest is going to be Betty Schubert. She's a lot of fun. Oh, she's just a doll. But she's a historian, and so she's got a lot of fun things to share. This is the holiday season. Oh, my goodness, the hustle, the bustle, the cooking, all the different things that people are involved with. I love the holiday season. I think it's great. Well, I came across some information regarding the mistletoe. And the mistletoe is very, very special. But I found out some interesting things about the mistletoe. And one of the points that came to my attention is that there is a story about a mistletoe bride. And it was made famous by a man, Thomas Haynes Bailey. In fact, he had a ballad called The Mistletoe Bow. It was published around 1830. Now, according to historians, they said there were all kinds of strange things going on, and one of them was one of the elements of this component of stories that he had put together was about a ghost bride. Mm-hmm. That's right. And did you know that brides years ago, they'd wear red. They didn't have white dresses like we so much enjoy today. However, Christmas weddings, they were always, when it came to decorating ancient times, they would use the mistletoe and just all kinds of greens. But there is a special story about this mistletoe bride, because she wants to play a game of hide-and-seek, and nobody can find this one bride. She has evaporated away. Her new husband pines away. But before he leaves this earthly experience, the lost bride's possessions are stowed in an attic, so he cannot be reminded of what has been lost. Now, according to this myth of the mistletoe bride, time passes and there comes a day when some people go through an attic. They find an old chest, inside of which they find a skeleton in a wedding gown and a crumbling bridal wreath. Apparently, the girl, in playing hide-and-seek, the young bride, entered into this big chest and was never able to get out. She got inside and suffocated during her suggested game of hide and seek. Well, there was all kinds of fascinations with this story, and there is a lot that goes on relative to that. But mistletoe has been accepted as a decoration in homes and halls. Oh my goodness. For generations, long, long time back. And why? It's because they have all of these bright red berries. And it's a very uplifting kind of a plant. And it was about in the 1700s when kissing under the mistletoe became established. And do you know what? For a long time, it was only permitted to be hung underneath stairs. And that's the only place where you could get away with the kissing, I guess. But there was another clause to the disciplines of mistletoe. And that was, you could only kiss a person as many times as there were berries on the mistletoe. I wonder if people went out and looked for the most abundantly buried piece of mistletoe that they could find. However, if it was a bad year and the mistletoes, well, they couldn't have a lot of berries on them for whatever reason, they still would hang whatever they could. And the hanging of greens was very important, but it was a tradition that people really, really liked. And it's one that goes on today. So just know, when you are looking at that mistletoe now, count the berries. If there's a dozen or so, you can stay under for a while. It won't bother anybody, unless somebody else wants to do the same thing. They may have to stand in line. Anyhow, I just thought that little bit of trivia was a lot of fun, and I wanted to share that with you. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. And don't forget to check show information for the gifts that are going to be upcoming. I had thought I would have time to share with you a delightful story about a dog. Yes, and a little kitty. Well, I think I'm going to have to share it with you later, because it's going to take more than a minute. And I want to encourage you, when you're out and about and you are doing your shopping, if you can pick up maybe a little bit of extra food somewhere, a can if there is a food donation barrel at your local grocery store, pick up something and drop it in the barrel. If there's a Salvation Army person out there ringing the bell, drop your loose change in. Whatever it is that you feel like doing. These are hard times for a lot of people, and you may not have a whole bunch of money. You may have gobs of it, but whatever you feel good about doing, whether it's donating to a children's hospital, maybe decorating a tree for someone and delivering it to them, baking up extra cookies and taking them to a neighbor that is elderly, or a family that maybe doesn't have very much. Whatever it is that you want to do, do it. Just don't think about it. Do it. Because the gifts from the heart, this time of the year, I think especially, but it's just something that adds to the season. It's wonderful. It's enriching. And, hey, it'll put a smile on your face and a warm feeling in your heart. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Remember, your mind belongs to you, and it's part of your responsibility to always be willing to learn, to open up to new opportunities, new attitudes, the opportunity for you to be better than you've ever been before. Enjoy your day or evening wherever you are on this magnificent planet of ours. God bless. I'll be here tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.